the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Today, we're going to be talking about one of the hottest topics in our culture, and that is sex education in the schools. It's an old issue. It's been around for some time now, but it has arisen in a completely new and shocking context in Montgomery County, Maryland, where a newly proposed sex education curriculum has parents outraged, and yet that doesn't seem to matter. Those who are pushing this thing are going straight with it, and the school board seems absolutely determined to see this thing through. I'm going to tell you a little bit about it, because it raises the whole universe of questions about what we should expect of the schools in terms of sex education. Whose responsibility is it to teach these things? What should be taught? How should it be taught? And by the way, when you hear what this school system's doing, you're going to need an aspirin. But it ought to get us thinking about what really matters, and it ought to get us very much concerned about what's going on in our own school districts, wherever you may live. First, a review of the news. The United States Golf Association has announced that it will undergo a policy change to allow transgendered persons to compete in professional golf tournaments. That's right, transgendered person. This follows on the heels of the U.S. Olympic Committee and the International Olympic Committee and the Ladies Golf Association in England. All these have already adopted, supposedly, these policies. We know that the Olympics, the International Olympic Committee, has done so. We talked about it on this program, and I went through the actual policy that was adopted by the IOC, and we looked at its lunacy, frankly. But now we have it in the United States Golf Association, and this is, after all, the USGA. This is the big organization that controls golf. It actually has the right to control the rules of golf. Well, let's just say this is a significant change in the rules. You know, what we have here is not so much a case of women who have supposedly become men who want to compete, but of men who have supposedly become women who want to compete. Now, what might be the advantage there? Well, it's the same thing that was faced in tennis. Men have more muscle mass. They have greater strength. And so a man who, after all, may undergo surgery or hormone therapy or anything else, he still has a surplus of strength over a woman of comparable size. And yet, that's not going to come into that. But, you know, my main concern is not really the fairness of all this in terms of the sporting arena, the sporting context. My concern is what this says about the utter confusion that now marks our culture when it comes to an issue as basic as gender and sex. Now, again, to Christians, I want to say we are the people who are informed about this matter by the Word of God. We're the people who know that gender's not an accident, that evolution didn't produce this. We're the people who are supposed to know what's really at stake here. And that means that we're the last people to say you can't change your sex. Now, here come the emails, I know, and I'm braced for it, but that's the reality. You can't change that. You can undergo surgery, you can do all the rest, but where are we going to be in terms of this rebellion against God's order and design and creation? Where are we going to be in terms of the confusion? How do you know who's whom anymore? I mean, after all, we just talked about this situation in New York City where they were deciding about the transgendered persons when it comes to bathrooms. This is something that's being faced. In fact, one of the major business magazines talked about how Fortune 500 companies are having to come up with, like, third bathrooms or taking gender completely off of bathrooms, just making them all individual private bathrooms. Think of the cost involved in that, but also think of the confusion that is embedded in that. I just find it absolutely mind-boggling. I know what it was like to grow up as a kid, and you understand male and female. And yet kids being raised today, they're being confronted with those who are male, female, and those who used to be male that are now female, those who are female and used to be male. You know, how do we as a church respond to this? I've done a great deal of writing on this. I'm trying to think it through from a consistently biblical perspective. I understand there are deep pastoral issues involved here. I know there are persons who have experienced what is now therapeutically defined as gender dysphoria who are greatly troubled about this, and I want to reach out to them with Christian love, but I also have to reach out to them with Christian truth, with biblical truth, and that is the fact that God, to his glory, has made us male and female. And if we have a problem with that, we need to come to terms with it in such a way that will bring glory to God. And we should not underestimate just how much of a challenge that may be. But I think the last thing we should do is join the bandwagon of confusion here, because I think I know where that's headed. Well, that's the U.S. Golf Association. Two new cable companies have decided to come out with homosexual-oriented channels. Evidently, the market is considered big enough that some cable services are calling out for these gay-themed stations, these gay-themed channels on the cable network. One of them is going to be called Logo, and the other one is going to be called Here. The New York Times says Americans increasingly accept gay culture despite some opposition to gay marriage. I found that a fascinating sentence. This is in an article entitled, A Foray into Gay and Lesbian Networks. Subtitled, Two New Cable Ventures Seek to Tap the Market. This was found in Monday's edition of the New York Times. But that sentence, let's hear it again. Americans increasingly accept gay culture despite some opposition to gay marriage. I don't know which part of that surprises me more. The first part of the sentence says that Americans increasingly accept gay culture. How do you measure that? I'm trying to figure that out when I take that sentence seriously. Does it have to do with gay characters on television? Does it have to do with gay literature, gay books? Does it have to do with, I don't know what. What does that mean? How would they measure it? That's quite an assertion for this paper to make. But the second part of the sentence is also equally fascinating. It says, despite some opposition to gay marriage. Some opposition? Everywhere it has come up where the citizens get to vote, it's a lot of opposition. Everywhere a state has considered a constitutional amendment to prohibit same-sex marriage, it has passed overwhelmingly. Even in liberal Oregon, it passed by double digits. For the New York Times, it's interesting, isn't it, how this editorial bias just creeps into what is supposed to be a news story. The sentence again, Americans increasingly accept gay culture despite some opposition to gay marriage. It'll be interesting to see how these two networks, these two channels fare in terms of the commercial application. Maybe they'll get exactly what they're looking for. Maybe they will be commercial successes. The channels are Logo, which is to be sponsored by Viacom, and Here, that is going to be sponsored by Regent Entertainment. Well, as they say, stay tuned. You may remember that the election in the Ukraine, now known just as Ukraine, a democratic election that was prompted by a popular revolt that led to the election of Viktor Yushchenko as the new president. You will remember that Mr. Yushchenko, it was thought, had been poisoned. Well, now we know he was indeed poisoned, presumably by the opposition. He was considered at one point kind of a poster boy, a model, and he was described as being very youthful and handsome. But by the time he was elected, when the second election was demanded by the people, he looked like a man that was close to death, his face pockmarked and severe lines drawn in his face, the skin barely hanging on his face. It is now known that he was poisoned. And now in the Wall Street Journal, Boris Yadodarsky has written about the KGB's poison factory. It turns out that the Soviet Union had labs that were developing just such poisons to be able to be used. We know that the KGB assassinated persons with poison, but now we know they were developing other forms of dioxin to use in just this kind of political warfare. It is a reminder of what a great gift was given the world with the demise of the Soviet Union. We just think about how history could be different. What if the Soviet Union had not fallen apart in the early 1990s, after the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989? What if the Soviet Union were still a world power? What if we were still in the midst of the Cold War? You know, there are a lot of troubling things that we have to talk about day by day on this program. There are a lot of challenges we face, but we need to be thankful, just with this one reminder, that the Soviet Union is no more. But we also need to remember that those scientists who were up to this nefarious experimentation are, at least some, still alive and still up to this kind of evil doing. And the poisoning of Mr. Yushchenko is just one more example of what could happen. Folks, in my commentary today, I deal with a big question. And it's one of those that really should matter to people who care about marriage. And it has to do with a libertarian argument for the protection of marriage, a libertarian argument against same-sex marriage. I would encourage you to go there. You can find it at albertmuller.com and today's commentary at crosswalk.com. Here's the deal. Libertarians have generally argued that the state, that is the government, should have very little authority to impose any moral values upon citizens. They should be free. And some libertarians go way out there to argue that that means there should be no morals legislation, and marriage itself should be just a matter of option. People should be able to contract with whomever they want for intimacy and all the rest. So the traditional libertarian argument has been more or less live and let live. That's what one law professor suggested. But now in the journal Policy Review, Jennifer Robeck Morse has written an article which offers a libertarian defense of marriage, and it's a brilliant piece. And I would really commend that you go and look at it, because her argument is you can only have liberty in an orderly society. And once you destroy marriage, that order is also destroyed. And thus, it won't matter if you have a free market, if you have social chaos. It won't matter if you have unrestrained liberty, supposedly, if the culture itself is falling apart at the seams because its most basic institution's been subverted. Go to albertmuller.com and read it. I think you'll find it interesting. And I think you'll be interested in what we're going to talk about when we come right back. Sex education in the schools. No small issue, no small controversy. I'm going to tell you why, and we're going to have a great discussion about it. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. The issue is sex education in the schools, and it is a recurring controversy. It seems like at one time or another, almost somewhere in America, this is certain to be a controversy. But right now, Montgomery County, Maryland, is ground zero for this controversy, and for good reason. I want to tell you what's going on there. A new curriculum that is being written for the schools, for sex education, goes beyond what you've heard almost anywhere else. Or I would put it this way. It almost pulls together every diabolical and really dangerous aspect you've heard, any radical idea you've heard elsewhere, and puts it together in one curriculum. That's what we've got here. Let me just give you a couple of examples. 10th graders, high school sophomores, will be shown a video that shows them how to use a condom by the use of an instructor putting one on a cucumber. Now, it's one thing to read about that, but there is a parents group that is outraged about this that actually has the clip. They put it up on their website. I looked at it. I almost couldn't believe it. It's almost literally impossible to believe that this is going to be shown to 15-year-olds. But it is. And the school board of Montgomery County is moving forward with this. Eighth graders will be told that homosexual couples are the newest American family. Normalizing it. That's it. The newest American family. Just take that as an observation. That's what they're being taught. More and more is coming out on this. There will be an opt-out, but the opt-out isn't going to be easy. There are going to be segments that will be very, very clear about discussions of homosexuality and bisexuality. They're going to be told that that people need to come to terms with their own gender identity. All these issues are going to be raised as if they're open questions, and it really comes down to a form of, brainwashing, of influencing the, I don't mean that in a technical sense, as if they're going to be hypnotized. I mean it in the sense that they are going to present this as if this is what normal, educated, progressive, tolerant people think. And just consider the source here. Number one, we're talking about teenagers. And by the way, this curriculum goes down into the lower grades, but I don't have a great deal of information about what kind of things are planned for the lower grades. I do know what are planned for the middle schools and the high schools. And let me tell you, as a parent, there is no way I'd put up with this. I mean, it's not even open to discussion. My kids would be out of there. And what really would concern me is the same people making these decisions are making decisions about what's being taught in history and politics and civics and math and every other area. And what we have here is a radicalism that is now being institutionalized in America's public schools. And sex education becomes the lever by which they're going to change the culture. They're going to move the templates of this entire culture by changing the moral understanding of young people. All this about sex education, is this what's necessary? I mean, is this what kids need to know? I want to hear from you out there today. I want to know what you think about this. What would you as parents expect to be taught in sex education in the schools? That's what I want to talk about. What would you expect to be taught? What would you expect not to be done and not to be taught? And would you be satisfied to know that your kids are being seduced into an understanding of sexuality in which you would have the issue of safe sex presented, you would have contraception presented, you would have condoms put on cucumbers? What in the world is going on here? The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I just have to believe that this is one of those issues out there in which a groundswell of opposition is going to build. My question is, will it build in time to influence this curriculum before this school board goes all the way and adopts it and puts it in the classroom? Because I think what we're seeing here is the tip of the iceberg of parental opposition and outrage. And, you know, eighth graders being told that homosexual couples are just the newest American family. Just absolutely normalizing a radical social and sexual revolution. Tenth graders being shown in a video how to put condoms on cucumbers. There are a good many outraged parents. They have formed a website. They are agitating and pushing and contending for changes in this curriculum, but they don't appear to be making much headway. The Washington Times reports just on Tuesday that some Montgomery County parents have presented the school board with 3,500 signatures opposing this new sex ed curriculum. But there are those on the other side as well. Here's Art Fable, who was representing the newly formed Montgomery County Progressive Alliance. They testified in favor of the curriculum. This is what they said, quote, "One group is sticking to a very narrow set of beliefs, not realizing the diversity of opinions and beliefs in this country, not realizing that people of any faith, any belief, can still be moral," end quote. Well, we could track that one down for quite a while. But what in the world does moral mean here? It means moral, well, does that mean you just, have sex with one person at a time? Safe sex, that appears to be the morality, this lie that sex can be made safe by using a condom. What you have here is the sexual morality that is institutionalized in marriage and has been honored as the norm in this culture because it was set down in the very Word of God and has been understood as fundamental to our law and to our customs and our moral habits for generations. It's now being rejected as intolerant in favor of this kind of sexual revolution. Let's go to Alvin calling from Tampa, Florida, listening on WTBN. Alvin, welcome to the program.
Good day to you, Dr. Mueller, and God bless you and your ministry. I would just like to say a couple of things. One, this is a testimony to the depravity of human nature. If there ever was a person that resisted the Calvinistic notion that men are dead in sin and trespasses, I don't know how they could anything otherwise considering this. Secondly, I would like to point out that the people that have this agenda have as their agenda the replacement of the conventional biblical with the news.
Alvin, we're losing you here, and you were making a great point there. And I'm just going to have, because we lost your cell, so I'm just going to extend your point, because, Alvin, I think I can read your mind. I think you're going to say to replace the morality that's set down in God's Word with this entire new system of artificial morality that's just by human negotiation put together by these liberal academics and theorists. And you're exactly right. It's always good to hear from Alvin. And, you know, what we face here in Montgomery County, Maryland, is just one little volcano going off where there's an entire range of activity going on. And the reality is that parents there are beginning to catch on. And I hope this will spread so the parents elsewhere will be asking some fundamental questions as well. And I agree with Alvin entirely. This is depravity. You want to see it? This is what it looks like. This is human sinfulness coming out because it is, just as the Apostle Paul warned in the book of Romans, not only doing such things, but approving of those who do them. Let's go very quickly to Paul calling from Cleveland on WHK Radio. Paul, go right ahead.
Hey, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Go right ahead, Paul.
All right, real good. Yeah, I guess you wanted some comments, so I just picked up the phone and thought I would just give you my two cents here. But I've got an 8-year-old son and an 11-year-old boy, and I've been trying to teach them about sex from, you know, when they were much younger in a very progressive way. And I don't think that the anything that they're teaching in the school is even goes far enough. I'm definitely in favor of teaching about safe sex and the use of condoms and, you know, any of that kind of stuff. I've been doing it myself with them, and I think the only reason I would take them out of class would be if they didn't teach it.
Okay, Paul, stay with me here. Let me just ask you a question. So you've got, I think, 11 and 8-year-old boys, as I understood. So, I mean, in short order, they're going to be, 15 and 12. If your 15-year-old decides to have sex, you're all right with that?
I have no problem with it as long as they understand the some of the dynamics of the pregnancy issues and everything else.
All right. Well, that's an honest statement. And it'll be interesting to see what other parents are going to come back in terms of a response to that. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. This is a place for talk. We need to take that worldview apart. What's really going on there? But Paul says he's fine with it. Are you? 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. I don't think most parents are quite so, well, progressive as Paul described himself. I hope not. We'll be right back. This is Albert Mueller.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. This issue of sex education is sure to get the blood boiling. And, you know, if my description of the curriculum in Montgomery County, Maryland, didn't get it started, my guess is that Paul from Ohio, he got it started with his comments. And I just going to take him at his word. I assume he means what he said. A progressive father has been teaching his two boys a very progressive understanding of sexuality, said that he wouldn't have any trouble with his boy, his eldest, if he reaches 15, deciding to have sex so long as he's aware of the consequences and all the rest. You know what? Paul has a right to teach that to his kids, at least in terms of the law, at least in terms of his parental authority. And I think we have to respect that, even though I believe that what he's teaching them is fundamentally wrong and will lead to much injury and much judgment upon them. But what about the parents whose convictions are very different? You see, it's Paul's understanding that's really being taught in this. And yet, what about those parents who believe that sex ought to wait until marriage and believe that their kids ought not to be prematurely sexualized and believe that, well, for one thing, they shouldn't be taught how to use a condom with a cucumber video? I want to know what you think. The number 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Debbie from Springfield, Ohio, listening on WHK. Go right ahead, Debbie.
Hi. I'm calling because I just heard the comment by the previous caller, and I definitely oppose his opinion, although, like you said, he has a right to it. I do oppose it.
Yeah, well, Debbie, when I say he has a right to it, I mean a constitutional right. I don't think he actually has a moral right to it. And in other words, we're all going to answer for our opinions, and I wouldn't want to answer to God for that opinion. I appreciate his honesty and candor in calling. It even helps us to frame this debate. It helps us to know there are parents that are out there. In fact, they're involved in this coalition in Montgomery County that is supportive of this curriculum. But, Debbie, if you disagree with it, first of all, tell me, do you have kids yourself?
I do have children.
Okay.
I have two children. I have a 14-year-old and a 10-year-old.
All right. What are you teaching them?
I am teaching them. First of all, as a parent, I think I have a very important role in protecting my kids' young minds and their hearts, really from exposure to the values and influence of this world. And I'm teaching them to love God, to live for Him. And I am teaching him, I'm teaching them abstinence, and I'm teaching them about purity. I'm teaching them things that will not corrupt their hearts and their minds, and that won't give them negative consequences that will have to that they'll have to live with.
All right, Debbie, I could have had an expert on this program as a guest, and I think I just had one. God bless you. Couldn't put it better. That was wonderful. That's exactly what a Christian parent should do, and we need to realize that we are the sex educators for our children. That's our responsibility. And I think one of the fundamental misunderstandings in this whole sex ed controversy is that the schools should be doing this in the first place. Now, I'd agree that an educated high school student, certainly a high school senior getting ready to graduate, needs to know where babies come from. And that's just a basic fact of biology. It can easily be taught in science without all the sexual overtones and without cucumbers. It can be taught without going into all these issues, ranging from homosexuality and bisexuality and gender identity and masturbation and the suggesting that kids should involve themselves in safe sex play as an alternative to intercourse and all the rest. That's just not for the schools, especially it's not for the schools when they're going to be using that to push a moral agenda of immorality. Let's go to Don calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Don, go right ahead.
Yes, sir. Thanks for taking my call. Well, I'm a 56-year-old man who has five grown children and six grandchildren, and I'm also a school teacher. And in my opinion, this gentleman, the feller, needs to have his head examined. I'm appalled. I think kids ought to learn the capital of Kentucky before they learn how to put on a condom. And I have seen personally in high schools what happens to children when they are involved in sex. And it leads to other things. It leads to drugs. It leads to other sorts of immoral behaviors. And I think it's terrible. I have a one unmarried child. She's 21. She's a Christian. As far as I know, she's still a virgin. And what her mother and I taught this last child at home is to follow God's plan. Anybody that would think it's okay to let a 15-year-old child, I wonder if you feel that way about if you had a daughter. This was a son, and just just to me, there's so much I have to say about this, but I'm just trying to figure out why a father would risk an STD that could be fatal or pregnancy because condoms are not 100% and celibacy is. So
yeah.
I think that the Christian model is the model to keep all of us safe and all of
That's
us happy.
Right. That's right. And Don, I agree with you. I think we also have to redefine safe. We need to take the safety of the soul into consideration here, the safety of the heart. We need to understand that promiscuousness, premarital sex, breaking God's law in sex brings judgment on us, brings horrible harm, robs us of the privilege of the purity of the marriage bed, and so much more. We'll be right back with a great discussion. I'm Albert Moeller. We got lots of callers on this one. There's just no doubt this is an issue that gets right where parents are, and that's the way it should be. Parents, we are the primary sex educators, and we need to be very concerned about whatever goes into the minds of our children, frankly, about sex or anything else. But in this culture, especially about sex. Let's go to Patricia calling from Leamington, Ontario. Patricia, go right ahead.
Hi. I don't necessarily agree that we shouldn't support kids having a sex education in the school system. I think that a lot of Christian parents, it appears to me, get a little bit too worried and, I guess, defensive about what is presented. And I think you can have both morality and safety for your children. You know, if you're teaching your kids at home to respect themselves and to respect other people, you're hopefully going to trust that the values that you are imparting to them are going to carry over into their social relationships.
Well, I think I understand that, Patricia, but let me ask you, would you be willing for your kids to be taught that the homosexual couple's just the new form of family? And, I mean, the condom and the cucumber thing, is that really fine with you?
I think it is. I think we have to become more inclusive in terms of how we look at the world and how, like, I just think we have to. I think that that's what love is all about, is being able to not be so judgmental and critical about what's happening with other people. And, yes, I think homosexuals need to have their rights as well. And, you know, I think it's an important time for Christians to take a second look at.
Okay, I think what you said is important, Patricia, but how as a Christian do you reconcile, you know, what you just said about homosexuality with what the Scripture clearly says about homosexuality being a sin?
Well, it really depends, I think, on how you interpret Scripture. I think, you know, if you look at Christ's message of love and the fact that he hung around a lot of people who were rejected in his time by society.
Right, and we got to go on, Patricia, but remember that he said, go and sin no more. That's the critical part of it. Yes, he didn't. He never said that sin isn't sin. And, you know, quite frankly, it's really not a matter of biblical interpretation. The Bible is so clear. Every single statement about homosexuality identifies it as sinful. And, well, we're going to have to move on. Let's go to David calling from Ames, Iowa, listening on KFGQ. David, go right ahead.
The Lord's blessings, Al. You mentioned the word brainwashing, and brainwashing is inevitable. God's Word tells us to be washed with the water of the Word. And if we don't wash our children in that world godly wisdom, they'll be washed in worldly wisdom. Any parent who sends his child to a Roman Catholic school should expect his child to be washed in Roman Catholic doctrine. Any parent who sends his child to a Mormon school should expect his child to be washed in Mormon doctrine. And any parent who sends his child to a God-hating human secular school should expect his child to be washed in worldly, God-hating wisdom.
David, are you usually such an equivocator? I enjoy your absolute candor there. And, you know, I wish I could tell you that I thought that the schools were other than how you described them. But, you know, all I have to do is look at this as being pushed by this one school district and look at what's behind it. And I just have to throw up my hands and say, I don't know what in the world we can say about a school system that would adopt such a thing, except just as you described it. So God bless you, David. You're right. You know, and what you say about brainwashing, it reminds me of the fact that I know we're often accused of indoctrinating people. Well, all indoctrinating means is teaching them. You know, that's just how intellectually and theologically disarmed so many people are. They're afraid of being called indoctrinators. I want to indoctrinate my children. Absolutely. I want to get the teaching in them, and I want that to take root and bear fruit. Let's go to Paula calling from Tampa, listening on WTBN. Paula, what you got to say?
Hey, Dr. Mohler, I love your show. Listen to it every day, and I just want to say that this business about, if I lived in Maryland, I would be up in arms. I would be, you know, talking to the school board, whomever I needed to, because this business of saying that homosexual couples are the new family is baloney. And talk about indoctrination or brainwashing, it's crazy. It seems like all these liberal things come out of either Massachusetts or Maryland, and I'm not picking on those states, but that seems to be where all the liberal stuff is.
Well, unfortunately, we got to throw some others in there, too, including California and the Pacific Northwest. And even though I'm a native Floridian, I got to say that our state, because I know you're from Tampa, has its own problems. But, Paul, let me ask you this. Do you have kids yourself?
I have an 18-year-old boy today. It's his 18th birthday, and I have a 15-year-old girl. Both my kids are Christians. Both of them are still virgins, and I'm really, really happy for them that they are. We talk about it all the time. We talk about not just because it's what God says and because it's going to give them more joy to stay pure, because there's someone out there for them. And when the timing is right, God will let them know.
Okay, let me ask you, Paul, I need your help. And there are a lot of folks listening here. You have an 18-year-old boy, an 18-year-old son, today. Happy birthday to your son, by the way. And how have you protected him from this kind of influence? Or do you think you have?
Well, I mean, he is a normal kid. He likes girls. He's heterosexual. He's going to the prom tomorrow. But we have just emphasized, first of all, respecting his body, that he has one body that God has given him, and that he needs to respect himself. We've also, because we do have a 15-year-old daughter, we have tried very hard to tell him that it's extremely important to have a respectful attitude towards the female gender, that they are not to be used and abused, despite what past history has said or formed. And
I think what you've done in terms of the moral teaching there is very important. I have a feeling I got some listeners out there that are reaching for the volume on the language, but nonetheless, you're making a point there. And I think when it comes to teaching teenagers, we need to recognize that the world is targeting them with all this. I mean, it's not like we live in a morally neutral context. We live in a context in which they're being targeted with pro-sexuality, pro-promiscuity, pro-premarital sex, pro-homosexual, pro-you name it. Everything's a matter of lifestyle and option. And gone is the notion of purity that is at the very heart of the biblical vision of sexuality. Not because Christianity is repressive when it comes to its understanding of sex, but because it is liberated to God's design and directed to God's glory. We need to talk about these things. Sometimes it can even get a little more explicit than any of us is comfortable with. But not talking about it is a lot more expensive than talking about it. I'll be back with some final thoughts in just a moment. This is the Albert Mohler Program. Well, welcome back. You know, this is one of those discussions we need to have recurringly, because this issue is not going to go away, because those who are pushing this kind of sex education program have an agenda. That agenda has a morality, and that morality is to encourage kids. Well, the assumption is they're going to have sex, so encourage them to have safe sex. And so what we have here is the formalization, the institutionalization of sexual promiscuity as the expectation of the curriculum. And not only that, but the curriculum then goes on to tell them exactly how to do it. So it actually gives them the mechanics and techniques, teaching them how to break God's law, teaching them how to violate marriage, how to rob themselves of their sexual purity. Now, I understand human sinfulness, and I want to go back. Alvin made that point, our very first caller today. This shows human sinfulness for what it is. I know that the human beings are going to sin. I know that sexual sin is going to happen. But we need to name it for what it is, And we need to protect kids from involvement in that. We need to encourage them not to. What kind of signal are we sending? Well, we know what kind of signal it is. When you start the condom and cucumber routine, you're telling them this is how to do it. Go do it. We need to set a high bar, a biblical standard. And we as parents need to take the responsibility and make certain that we are living it and that we are teaching it and we are inculcating it and we are encouraging it and we are upholding it and we are monitoring it. And we need to protect the hearts of our children and our minds. I appreciated the concern about protecting a teenager's mind, protecting their moral innocence. You know, there's some things they don't need to know. We are facing in this country a culture war, a culture conflict that becomes so clear when you look at an issue like this. Even in this program this afternoon where you had two people who were calling up saying, I'm for progressive sex education. I believe that homosexuality, it's fine to normalize that. And I believe that it's fine to teach kids how to use contraceptives and condoms and all the rest because so long as they have sex, you remember that's what was said. If that's what Paul said, if his teenage son was going to have sex, then that's fine as long as he does it safely. You see, that's one side of the argument. And you understand that's the side that's winning. That's the side that is being institutionalized in the curriculum. And on the other side are Christian parents who say, no way, I am not going to let my kids be taught that. I am not going to sacrifice them on the altar of this sexual revolution that has become the driving force of so much of our culture. I'm going to protect their hearts. I'm going to protect their souls. I'm going to protect their bodies. I'm going to protect their future marriages. I'm going to protect them from themselves and protect them from those who would direct them into a path of sexual promiscuity, sin, all that comes with that, and rob them of God's glory, the wonder of marriage, and the purity of God's perfect plan. We needed to have this discussion, and we'll be back next week for Intelligent Christian Conversation. See you then.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows, Dr. Moeller's daily crosswalk commentary, and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.